Hey everyone, my name is Ray Voice and this is the Startup Specialist Podcast. Today we have a very experienced guest on our podcast. His name is Dan Nicholson. You can see his book, and the book is called Rigging the Game, right, Dan?
Yep, that's right.
Right, so earlier today I was reading about your book and I'd love to talk more about it. So Dan is a finance guy for entrepreneurs, right? Dan, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us more about your book?
Yeah, my pleasure, Ray. Thanks for having me on, first off. Yeah, maybe like so many of our listeners or your listeners today, I was that kid growing up scheming on business ideas, just constantly thinking about starting a business, mostly bad ideas, nothing sketchy, but just nothing that was really viable. Went off to business school, got an IS degree and an accounting degree, thinking the combination of technology and accounting would be the best skill set to be an entrepreneur. And then I went as far away as you can go from entrepreneurship, which is I did a fellowship at the board that writes all the U.S. accounting standards, worked for one of the big global accounting firms, worked for a Warren Buffett-backed company, did a bunch of things that look really good on a resume, but I was miserable the entire time. So finally, after changing jobs several times, went out on my own and took my accounting skills and started a CPA firm focused on tax planning about 15 years ago. So we were, if not the first, one of the first couple firms to focus on tax planning for small business. And it was there that I realized that I needed to unlearn a lot of what I thought I knew about business and what I'd learned at business school. And that ultimately culminated in my book, Rigging the Game, which is kind of my breakdown of how to rig the game, get what you want on your terms as a small business owner, which is going to require you to think and act differently than what maybe the conventional wisdom has taught you.
Okay, let's start from there. What do you think are the commonalities among the tax and accounting needs between a startup and a small business?
Great question. So maybe your listeners and maybe you're familiar with this paradigm where big corporations pay 0 to 20%, small business owners pay 40% to 60%, and average tax rates. But the reality is that the small business owner who's paying for startup, who might be paying 40 to 60%, can access the same benefits, credits that the corporation and sophisticated investor who's paying 0 to 20% can. And it starts with kind of doing the opposite of what most people are doing, which is most people have a very transactional relationship with their CPA where they interact once a year. Or if they are interacting more frequently than that, every conversation is about the past. And they say this year's taxes, they're talking about last year's taxes. And so there's this sort of constant living in the past when it comes to their tax and accounting stuff. But the big corporations who pay 0 to 20%, they're future focused. They're always looking to the future. What are the new rules, new incentives? How do we make sure that we capture those new rules and incentives so they're being future focused? So the key step is to move from being with a very reactive, what I call archaeologist CPA, who's always digging up the past, to an architect who's future focused and showing you how, based off your goals and what your business is doing, how you can access the benefits, credits, deductions.
Great. So as a founder and business owner, how do I know if my accountant is more of an archaeologist or somebody who is future oriented?
Yeah, I would ask them how they interact with their clients and what percentage of their clients they do strategic planning with. So someone who you're working with that's more of an architect, they're going to have a very specific onboarding process. Something like what we do, which is step one, really understand the context of the business, background, all the how, if there's investors, how those investors structured the deal with you, going through line item of all the different transactions on the P&L and balance sheet, really getting that context. So understanding that, reviewing your entity structure, reviewing the last 3 years of your tax returns, showing you every available deduction and credit so that you're opting in or opting out. That should be part of the onboarding, and you should be left with a detailed plan of how you're going to be managing your finances. And then they should have a clear path of how they're going to work with you on an ongoing basis. If they're like, oh yeah, you know, give me your taxes and, you know, you just reach out when we have questions, that's not going to cut it. You need a very structured relationship, just like you'd expect from your marketing agency, just like you'd expect from any technology partner, that they have a clear roadmap of how they're going to work with you. It's structured at the beginning. And if you do that from the beginning, there's a very clear ROI on the work from that accountant, because they're showing you how to save on taxes from the beginning. So they really should be paying for themselves and then some.
Right. So let me ask you for some candid advice right now. And this has been always like this for me. In my two startups that I exited, and in my current businesses too, what we basically do is we work with the accountants every quarter to get budgets. And then once we have those budgets, we make our decisions of the budgets we have and try to stick within the budget. Okay. So what's your opinion on that methodology, and how can we improve it?
So I would be curious, when you get those budgets, how accurate and reliable did you find them to be? Or were you oftentimes kind of like, hey, this is nice, but they're not particularly useful? What would you say your experience was with that?
So generally speaking, the budgets are very accurate. But the thing is, I've had experience where the budget was way off, and we could afford to spend more on advertising and that sort of stuff. But in that case, when we do a sort of on-the-go readjustment of the budget, there's usually more of a downside to it, because we have to like then do a complete reanalysis of all of the budgets we had, and it just messes up the whole system that we have going on, right? So what I prefer is to just get the budgets for every quarter and then work off them.
Yeah, so very common, what I've observed, folks coming to us, is that they've had budgets prepared, they have dashboards and forecasts and key performance indicators. And I'm like, well, how is that working for you? I'm like, yeah, we do it, but it's rarely accurate. So we kind of just, they're a bunch of made up numbers. So we do it because our investors want us to do it, but we don't really use it. And the issue is that oftentimes the person who prepared it, they don't have enough context about how the business operates and the business's goals to actually prepare a budget that works. They're just going off general assumptions, general templates, etc. And the consequence of that is that it becomes this thing that you do and you put a bunch of time into it, but it's not particularly useful. So the key thing is finding someone who's going to actually partner with you to really understand how the business operates, where you're taking it, what your goals are, so that they're going to give you something that is decision useful and digestible. Digestible would be, we can figure out what's right and what's wrong pretty quickly, you know, under a couple minutes, versus we got to spend hours trying to figure out what's off.
Wait, so earlier today I asked my Discord group a question, and that question I think applies here, right? So what do you think is the difference between the needs of a startup as it grows from going from the bootstrapping phase and eventually getting funding and get heavy cash flow? How do you think they should transform their accounting team and their accounting department to stay on top and be the most efficient they can be with their numbers? And once you answer that question for me, I also want to know how can an owner operator know that it's time to upgrade and modify their accounting team?
Yeah, good questions. So there's a few different behaviors that we need to adopt. The first is that the founders and business owners need to own the fact that every business decision that they make is a financial decision. So a lot of startup founders and small business owners, they just want to focus on the thing the business does. Like they just want to work on the technology, or they just want to work on the marketing side of things. And they're like, the accounting and finance people, they're going to handle the money stuff. So that is a dynamic that's doomed for failure because every decision you're making as a leader of the business has a financial consequence. And so there's got to be a really clear cadence of communication on both sides for that relationship to be successful. So that it starts with that. Did you have a follow-up question on that? Apologies. So it starts with the dynamic from the beginning.
Right. So my question was, as a business operator, how do I know that it's time to upgrade my startup, upgrade my accounting department, because we have room to make the numbers more efficient?
Yeah. Well, first off, the question to the so there's a principle in the accounting world. It says consistency over accuracy. So yeah, we want the numbers to be accurate, but what's more important is consistency. Are you doing the work at the same cadence in the same way? So maybe you're recording it to the wrong place, but at least you're consistently recording it in the wrong place so we can figure out the discrepancies quickly. But oftentimes there's a lack of consistency. So you're not getting the financial reports at the same time, or when you get them, they're not. There's always issues you have to resolve, and then they're not digestible. So you can't discern what's actually going on because it's just pages and pages of information, but there's no kind of summary or way that you, as the business leader, can look at it and figure out what's going on. So if there's inconsistency, if the reports are not digestible, it's time to make a change. The last thing is just in general, in ferreting out if someone is good, is you ask them what is the most important financial statement? And the correct answer is the balance sheet. So if the balance sheet is wrong, the P&L statement of cash flow, those are going to be wrong as well. Because those statements and all of the reports and everything are a function of the balance sheet. So when assets and liabilities change, there's often a change on your revenues and expenses. So most oftentimes, 9 out of 10, 95 out of 100 books that I look at are wrong because the balance sheet is wrong. Things aren't fully reconciled, or they haven't actually captured all of the liabilities of the business. So maybe the business has a bunch of unearned revenue. You get paid in advance, or someone pays for a subscription. An annual subscription, you get paid for it in advance. There's still a liability. You have to provide service or technology over the next 12 months. So revenue isn't necessarily recognized all at once. It's recognized over 12 months. So to align with your expenses. So we got to make sure that that balance sheet is correct, essentially at all times, so that we can rely on the other financials.
So, the question I wanted to ask you is, I have this observation where when we were a small company, I had my secretary do all of our accounting and books for us. And those numbers were much more accurate compared to now that we have an agency doing it. Why do you think that is? And also, what are your opinions on having an internal accounting department versus getting an agency to do it?
Well, anytime an internal person does it, if they're committed to the process, they're probably going to do it more accurately because they have like a fingertip feel to what's going on. Maybe they're the one who actually paid for the expense to begin with, so they know what you got from Amazon. Whereas if you're an agency and you just see Amazon come through, could be anything. Really. So it can be difficult for the agency to know how to code transactions without asking. And then on the business side, it can become frustrating because you're going, why am I paying this person to do this when they're just asking me what every transaction is to begin with? Like, maybe I should do it anyways. So that paradigm can certainly exist, and where an internal person can be more effective at the coding of transactions, where the trade-off or the problem can become is when your accounting becomes more complex. So maybe there's detailed sales tax tracking that you need to do, or there's a bunch of what's called accrued expenses, accrued liabilities, things where you need to understand accounting principles, where you're going to see that maybe the internal person just doesn't have the skill or the expertise to know how to handle those transactions. But an internal person is almost always going to have more knowledge about where to record certain types of expenses. And they're also going to be just working for your company. So they're only going to, it's like that's all they're doing versus books for 40 different firms.
Okay, so regarding that, what tips do you have for founders and owner operators who are trying to learn accounting for their business, right? Because when I started out, I had to go to community colleges, sit in classes, and learn those accounting principles, the basics, so I can run my business. What are your principles for others?
Yeah, there's a fine line between knowing enough to be dangerous and trying to become an expert at it. So there's a few different pathways to getting there. One is find a accounting partner who can explain things in a simple and digestible way where they can teach you it. Or you're going to have to do a combination of maybe taking some classes or reading some basic accounting principle type books. But ideally, you find someone who's going to educate you.
Great. So, do you have any book recommendations?
I mean, of course, I'm going to recommend my own book, Rigging the Game. It's going to help you to design processes and systems that are going to align with what you want to ultimately produce. In terms of like traditional, like nuts and bolts accounting, I can't think of a good, I don't have a good recommendation. It's something we've always just taught our clients. So I don't have a solid recommendation there.
Great. So tell us more about your book. What principles does your book teach you?
Yeah, so the idea of rigging the game is how to get what you want on your terms without compromise. That's the idea of it. So it's understanding. Getting clear on what is going to be the path for you to be successful in business. Many of us in business suffer from what I call a business multiple personality disorder, which is just like a tongue-in-cheek way of every time you read somebody else's book or someone else's article, blog post, podcast, you try and adopt their point of view, you try to take on their voice and their tactics and their strategies, and it's incredibly problematic because now all of a sudden you're 1 week you got this approach, and next week you got a totally different approach. You're trying to 10x. Now you're trying to optimize. You keep flip-flopping. And any individual business strategy can work. It's back to kind of the consistency that's key and not keep trying to morph. So I encourage people to play their game, lean into their strengths, not try and become someone that you're not. Realize that running a small business. Startup is about optimizing, not maximizing. So maximizes have the most today. Optimizes what is your key, what's your number one or top two priorities, and how do we put all of our resources towards that? Getting clear on what I call your solvable problem, which is your unique definition of wealth. So what are we really trying to fund and what timeline so we can align the objectives of the organization to supporting you ultimately getting the outcome that you want. Of course, I want everyone to go to wealthtype.com and find out their wealth type. So I developed what I call the five wealth types. And there's hustlers, gamblers, optimizers, savers, and outsourcers. There's no right or wrong wealth type, but understanding your wealth type will help you to design the right type of business for you to get the outcome that you want. So those are some kind of samplings of things that I teach and talk about.
That's great. I'm definitely going to read that book now. Another question I have from the group is, this is going to sound a little bit, maybe I don't know, stupid, and I don't want to say that, but people often believe that they are so small, they do not need to worry about their wanting much. So can you give us some examples of how accounting negligence looks like when you are small and what it starts to look like as you grow up?
So 82% of small business owners go out of business because of cash flow issues. So if you're not staying up on your accounting and you're not looking at those financials and you're not staying up on the financial health of your business, then you're going to be part of that 82% who go under because of cash flow problems. So that's just, those are the numbers. And those are not like a just this year sort of thing. This is a longitudinal study of how businesses tend to cause unnecessary financial strain and stress. And again, it's because they just want to focus on the thing they're good at and they don't want to deal with the money stuff, even though they want to have a bunch of money. When I ask people what types of rules they have around their money, they say something like, make as much as possible, like a joke, like, that's my rule, is have as much as possible. And you're like, okay, but like, no, seriously, what rules do you have? And pretty universally, people don't have any rules or principles. So here they are guiding this ship that its primary objective is to make money, but they don't have any principles or rules around how they're going to manage or control their money. So again, you're kind of designing a system from the beginning that's almost dooming you to be part of that 82%. And it just gets worse. Because you're scaling it's like building a technology with a really bad architecture and then trying to scale it. It's like you built something from the beginning that's not scalable. The problem gets worse. Like the system crashes more often as we try to scale it. That's what happens when companies don't have the right financial infrastructure and then they try and scale, the problems get worse. And I'll just tell you that business owners don't understand the terms liquidity and solvency. Liquidity is your ability to pay short-term expenses, 12 months or less. Solvency, ability to pay long-term expenses, liabilities, more than 12 months. And that's not something they know how to calculate or track. And so what I've seen over the last 5 years during COVID times, specifically here in the US, although it's happening globally, but here in the US, there was a bunch of money that was injected into the small business community. There were grants, credits, and there was also something called the Economic Injury Development Loan. Business owners got windfalls of cash. At least I consider it to be a windfall. They just wake up, and in some cases, you might have received $1.5 million loan overnight. So they're looking at their bank account, and they're like, "I've made it! I got hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in my account. I finally made it." And so they uplevel their lifestyle. They start buying bigger houses, second houses, putting their kids in private school, going on nicer vacations, and treating the money that came in as if it was new ongoing recurring revenue when it was, again, a windfall. So one time. And in some cases, that money had to be paid back. So I have been seeing business owners in financial dire straits similar to like 2008, 2009, where they thought they were scaling over the last 5 years, but their net worth actually decreased because they had a bunch of debt that they took on and now they don't have the revenue to pay for it. So don't scale, long story long, don't try and scale a shaky foundation.
Hearing about that, it sounds like the accounting education among business owners is really something everybody should work on. There is a system I teach in my workshops for young entrepreneurs where there's a three-step process, right? I tell them to get enough cash upfront so they don't have any cash flow problems. The second thing I teach them is to get not leave a lot of unpaid invoices and manage their risk. And the third thing I teach them is to don't waste a lot of cash sitting in a current account, either allocated to inventory, allocated to advertising, or allocated to a savings account. What opinions do you have about that, and how do you think I can improve this framework?
I think that's prudent advice. Collect as much cash. I think you said step one, collect as much cash as you can up front. In terms of, so what I advocate for folks is setting rules in advance, because we know that as humans we're biased. We're largely controlled by our biases, anchoring bias, loss aversion, ownership bias, like so many biases, on and on and on. And so the key is writing the rules in advance. It's one of the principles I talk about in my book. And so you gave a good example of rules that you have. And so I like to get kind of granular in how I'm going to divide up my money, typically between three and five bank accounts, so based off risk. So I take a waterfall approach. I got an operating account that's got to have a certain balance in it. Then if I go over that balance, that goes into my next account. Maybe that's my tax account. Then I've got another account for, say, bets or investments that I'm going to make. And I have certain rules around that. So I'm separating the money into these different accounts based off the risk and a pre-prescribed amount or balance, but they're rank ordered. And the reason why I separate it into different accounts is there's something called the mental accounting bias. It's a real bias. Based on, and people can Google it and find Yale has a good explainer video on mental accounting bias. But just simply by dividing our money into different buckets based off risk significantly improves our decision making. So if anyone at a minimum did that, they already make significantly better decisions in their business, even more benefit than a budget, simply by dividing the money into these different accounts, because a budget is not a preventative control. It doesn't prevent you from overspending. It just detects if you have. But if your money is bucketed into different accounts and you go over, well, the card declines because you don't have any money in your account. So it prevents you from going over spending. So that would be something I would add to your framework.
Great. I think we do that too at our company. Another thing I want your advice on is what about merchant accounts, right? As an international business owner, merchant accounts sometimes becomes a big problem for me and my clients. So what's your opinion on the risk management strategy regarding the merchant accounts?
Have at least a couple. Yeah, for sure. Have at least a couple accounts. You don't want to be one of those people who tomorrow Stripe shuts you down and all your money is locked, or PayPal. I'm sure you've heard all those stories. So try to diversify it across, ideally three merchants if you can.
Right. So, what can you tell me about the risk management strategies regarding the merchant accounts? Right? Should we just get three different merchant accounts from three different providers? And if they do get into some sort of trouble, what are the recovery methods for them? And finally, what's your opinion on a high risk merchant accounts for those high risk businesses?
So definitely having multiple merchant vendors is key. And I'm sure people are aware of this, so I don't know how much you already talk about these sort of things, but managing, so you definitely want to have in place a high risk merchant provider who not a Stripe or not a PayPal. You may have Stripe and PayPal as part of that. I mean, many of us essentially need to have PayPal part of your losing sales, but you want a third party that is outside sort of the big group of folks who generally has a much higher risk tolerance. So you need to diversify outside of that. Of course, managing refunds and as much as possible processing those refunds independent from the merchant platform. So somebody wants a refund, You ACH them, or you do something else where it's not going through the merchant platform. Of course, that's more burdensome, but one of the prevailing reasons why you get shut down is they think you've got too high of a refund risk and they don't want to carry that. So the more that you can handle those refunds through a not through another party is going to be maybe the most significant thing you can do to mitigate getting shut down, besides diversifying over a few different merchant platforms. You get shut down or locked by Stripe or PayPal, like you don't have a lot of control, right? You can challenge, and you're just going to be on hours of customer service support. You can try to escalate it. But unfortunately, it can be kind of a black box that might take you months to get out of.
Right. Can I also have your advice on the merchant account routing strategy? Where some people recommend a sort of equal division, let's say 33%, 33%, and 33% in three different accounts. And some recommend a different strategy where we have 80% of the money going through one account, 15% going in the second account, and 5% going in the third account. But there's an argument of building your sort of a history with the providers, so in future you get a more favorable response from them. So what are your opinions on that?
I've seen both work and I've seen both not matter. So there's not a silver bullet, unfortunately, where you can say, okay, if I do this, I put 80% through this vendor, I'm guaranteed of them escalating. Not necessarily the case. It's more of the 80% would more be a function of total dollar volume. So if you're doing tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, like absolutely you got quite a bit of sway. But if you're running a couple hundred grand through and that's 80% of your revenue, you don't have a whole lot of weight. So it's sort of a chicken and egg type scenario where when you're smaller, you kind of diversify across three platforms. When you get to a pretty large scale, then you could go 80, 15, 5, because the total dollar value will be much more meaningful for the vendor to care about you going away.
Great. So I also want to like get sort of a behind the scenes view for, let's say I'm a business owner and I give away my accounting department, hire some accounting agency and like get them to do all this stuff. The moment I'm handing over my accounting system to someone else, what are they doing with it? What are they thinking about it? How is the work gonna be? Okay, can you give me some behind the scenes insights from that?
Sure. Yeah. I can sort of tell you what I've experienced from a broad range of firms and then kind of my own approach to it. So, a lot of times you're giving it to either one individual bookkeeper, they're just a one person team, and you've just taken on a ton of risk because chances are, more times than not, there's not sufficient segregation of duties. So now they can do the recording function, record things. They have access to your bank account to move stuff around. Their ability to commit fraud could be pretty significant. So, not that, of course, we want to assume the best, but we got to plan for the worst. So, got to be careful about if you're going to hand it off to make sure that we're limiting what they're able to do to one responsibility, just recording. As an example. So oftentimes a single point of failure, it's one person. Could be a lot of inconsistencies. You need to set the tone on how they're going to gain access. So if you use LastPass or any sort of password manager, it should stay in your system. You should control that. You don't want to just email over passwords or just assume that they have something in place, because most of them don't. And unless you're a CPA where you're regulated by the Department of Treasury because you're also doing tax filings, your chances are you don't have an IT security plan in place. So just traditional bookkeepers don't have requirements no legislative requirements on how they're storing your data, where they're storing your data, how they're protecting your passwords or things. So you as an organization need to dictate how that information will be shared, where it'll be stored. If you're going with kind of a one person or smaller, like bookkeeping exclusive company. If you're going with a bigger agency that is a CPA firm in particular that has regulations, you've got a lot more comfort there. But even then, I would want to dictate how my information is being shared and stored. So that would be my own personal bias. The reality is that they're not going to care more about your business than you care about your business. You're a client out of 20 or 30 clients that they're working on. And it doesn't mean they're not trying to do good work, but you're always going to know more than they know about the details. So the biggest trap when you outsource it is assuming that it's now just handled. It's going to have to be collaborative. You need to give feedback, review it, not assume that they're reconciling everything. So you're going to want to go back and double check and make sure that the balances look correct. And I can tell you that while my firm has a very thorough monthly close process signed off on based off what I learned working for Fortune 5 companies, basically, that's not the standard. That's where like pretty significant exception to the norm. So clients are usually coming to us because they're really frustrated because they're like, I've been paying someone for a year and I just realized my books are totally messed up. Like, that's terrible. That really sucks, but it also says something about how you're running your business if it took you a year to realize that your books are screwed up. So handing it off to an agency does not end your responsibility. It doesn't change your responsibility. It's the same. It's just that you might be getting some cost savings by not having an internal person. So I hope that's not too preachy, but that's been my experience.
Yeah, my question is, how often do you recommend getting a third-party accounting auditor to check both parties' work, both for the business owner and the accounting agency doing the work for them? Because we
Yeah,
like
good
to,
question. Good question.
we like do a third-party audit every 6 months. How often do you recommend we do that? Or for generally a business owner or a startup to do it?
If you're a startup and you brought on shareholder venture capital of any sort, you're going to need to do that at least annually. More frequently, every 6 months, it's sort of a balancing act between. If you're getting a lot of benefit from it versus like, is there an ROI on having it more frequently than annual? That's kind of a personal preference. So somewhere between every 6 months and 12 months.
This was a great interview with Dan, and I'm gonna put all of his links and especially the link to his book in the description of this video. So please go check it out. And the book sounds really nice, so I'm gonna check it out too. And I hope you guys are gonna check it out, okay? So have a great day, and I'm gonna see you in the next episode.